Okay, we're doing Rav Chalap and Parshat Chaye Sarah. The greatness of Sarah Imenu. The Akeda, we're on page Kuf Dalet, was where Avram was fixing what he had initially questioned Hashem. B'maidaki Rashena. Avram had questioned, how do I know I will inherit this land? And in the Akeda, he undid that. Because in the Akeda, he was told earlier that Yitzchak is your future. That's how you'll inherit the land. And then in the Akeda, he has to say, I have no idea how this is going to work out. I'm going to bind my son and do it your way. With the question of Bamaida, he was saying, I want to understand. And with the Akeda, he was saying, even though I don't understand, I'm going to do what you want. And we will now discuss these ideas, the greatness of the Akeda, what was in the prophecy, what was the back and forth, Sarah's passing, and Avram's eulogy before she dies. The commentaries mention here that this is exceptional. Ordinarily, you begin by weeping when a person passes away, and then evolve into eulogizing, mentioning how great the person was. And by Avram, it goes the other way around. Avram begins by eulogizing, lispod l'Sarah, and then livkota, and then he weeps over her. Why is that the order? Why is the chaf in the word livkota, to weep over Sarah, a small chaf? His weeping is minuscule. The Midrash Rashi brings is that Sarah passed away when she heard about the Akedah, that her son was taken to be slaughtered. And before they told her, but don't worry, he wasn't, she passed away. What's going on here? Hashem tells Avram, listen to Sarah, whatever she says. Rashi writes that Avram wasn't on Sarah's level of prophecy. So how did Sarah get so excited over this commandment that she dies? And Avram, who wasn't on her level in prophecy, did it swiftly and ran to do Hashem's mitzvah. And he was so happy, he gets up early in the morning, Hashem said to do it, we're going to go do it. Even though he should have asked Hashem, but yesterday you said Yitzchak's my future, and today you're telling me to sacrifice him, and he doesn't have an answer to that contradiction, and he does not question Hashem. He charges forward. Sarah dies from the story, and Avram fulfills the story. What's going on here? So the Akedah was where Avram had an opportunity to fix what he had asked B'maidaki Rashina. Avram had questioned Hashem. How am I going to know this is going to work out? I have no kids. And now, Avram does not question Hashem. V'hemin b'Hashem. So then, he's saying, I don't know how you're going to fulfill your end of it. You said Yitzchak's my future. You're telling me to bind him, but I'm moving forward even though I don't know how you're going to do your end. We think it's a contradiction, but we don't understand what you're seeing. We don't understand. So Hashem can tell us Zachor and Shamo in the same utterance. So Hashem can also fulfill Yitzchak's your future and offer him as a sacrifice, even though the two seem to contradict. I don't understand. Yitzchak doesn't have kids yet. You're right. I don't understand. Chazal tell us the Aron takes up no space, right? How does that work? There are things we don't understand about how Hashem runs the world. Our sages say, when you would measure the Aron and you would measure the Holy of Holies, it didn't fit. So how did it get in there? It doesn't fit, the Talmud says. You're right. It doesn't. But it is. But it is in the Holy of Holies. And if you'd measure the Holy of Holies and then you'd measure the Aron separately, the Aron didn't. It shouldn't have fit into the Holy of Holies. You're right. Talmud says you're right. It doesn't. No. It didn't fit into the room. There wasn't enough space in the room that the Aron should be there. So Avram's wholeness was a merit that would help us say, Naseh v'nishma. We're prepared to do even though we don't yet know why. How do you do that? If you have a desire to do the will of Hashem, then you're ready to charge forward even though you don't understand why. I don't know, but okay, I'm going to do what you say. So the Talmud says, blow shofar, so that I remember the Akedah, and then I consider it as though you bound yourselves before me. The Akedah is different from any other schut. The Akedah we can consider it as though we did it. It's different than something else. Something else, you say, look at what my great-great-grandfather did. It should be a merit for me. Here it's different. It's like we just said, that the greatness that a person's willing to say, I don't understand, and I'm ready to do what you said, I'm not going to start questioning you, Hashem. Wait, how does this work? So that's the greatness that we see in Avram over here. So it can be something that we can also do. Look at how many Jews gave up their lives in the Inquisition. How many Jews said, how many Jews were not willing to turn on the way of Hashem, even though they had no answers? Rabban Shalom, they're throwing us into burning furnaces. So we know the story of Avram and Daniel and Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, and they had these miracles. And how many Jews did not have those miracles? How many Jews burnt at the stake? So a kid sees his father burning at the stake. I grew up with a story that there's a lot to think about this story. A man once admonished a Jew. He was telling him, why are you so fat? Why do you eat so much? Why are you such a slob? Looking at you, you're always covered with oil. You're always filthy. You're always eating. Why? So the Jew answered him. He said, this is a true story, and there's a lot to think about in this story. The Jew answered him. He said, I was a kid when they burnt my father at the stake. And when they burnt my father at the stake, one minute he was there, he was a small, flimsy man, and the next minute he was gone. And I promised myself that if my kids see me burning at the stake, it's going to take a long time. There's going to be a lot to burn. There's a lot to think about that story. It sounds like, think about it. I'm walking around with the story for almost 30 years. I heard the story when I was in fifth grade, and it was a stunning story to me. I mean, it hasn't left me. I'm telling you, again, I wasn't bar mitzvah yet. I must have been 10 years old when I heard the story. And the story's with me. There's a lot of depth to that story. Meaning, the person says, I'm not, you see me as a slob, you should know. I'm reacting to a trauma I saw as a kid. Now that means he's living his whole life thinking he's also going to burn at the stake. If you think about the story, there's a lot to the story. Coming back to Rav Charlap, so we have to live with these tests. The Jewish people have lived with these tests, and we haven't had an angel show up every time and say, don't kill the kid. We haven't had how many people lost their children in the Holocaust. You know, I come from a family where my great-grandfather came out of the Holocaust saying, we can only thank Hashem, we can only thank Hashem. Half he took and half he gave us. What does that mean, half he took? That means my great-grandfather saw four of his kids murdered before his eyes, and the other four he merited to have after the Holocaust. So he always used to say, I have to thank Hashem. On Yom Tov it says, you celebrate Yom Tov, half the day you spend davening and learning, half the day you spend enjoying. So that's a perspective on life. Half goes for Hashem and half goes for us. So he was a jovial man, and he'd always say, we have to thank Hashem. So yeah, in perspective you say, whole families perished in the Holocaust, and his family didn't. He came out of the Holocaust, found his wife, found four of his children, but that's not what he said. He said, the perspective is half for Hashem and half for us. He looked at the four kids murdered before his eyes as half for Hashem. Well, how do you deal with that? Says Rav Charlap, the Akedah is something we take with us as a way we live our lives. There's the concept that I don't have answers, and I can live with the way you run the world, even though I don't have answers for everything you do. Avram says, I'm willing to go forward with that Akedah, even though I don't have answers. 30 years earlier, or 60 years earlier, Avram is asking Hashem, how do you plan on making this promise work? You told me you're giving me the land of Israel. How? And then the next 60 years, Avram grows to the point where at that Akedah, he's not asking questions. At that Akedah, Hashem tells him something which seems to contradict everything else he's thought until now, and he doesn't ask questions. He's not going to have kids. All the promises. I don't have to worry about how Hashem's going to make it work. I have to do my job here. And then when the angel says, don't! So Avram isn't paying attention. Hashem told me to do something. The angel says, don't touch the kid. And Avram continues. So the angel has to continue and say, Al tas lamuma, don't do a thing I said. You see the repetition? The angel began by saying, Al tishlach yadcha al hanar. Don't extend your hand. Avram thinks, why do I have to listen to him? Hashem told me differently. The angel says, I told you not to do anything. So then Hashem says, wait a second, why are you telling me that, Avram says? I'm supposed to do this. He says, Hashem wanted you to think you're supposed to do this. But safek nefashot la'akel, when you're not sure if Hashem said what you think or what I'm saying, you're not allowed to slaughter your kid. I'm telling you, Hashem said, just bring him up. Hashem didn't say slaughter him. You brought him up. You have no right to do anything. I'm telling you what Hashem meant was just to bring him up. Avram starts wondering. And then he says, maybe, but that's what Hashem wants. So then Hashem says, no, I swear that you did right. That from now on, this is going to be a merit for you. Because when Avram's standing there, the angel says, you have to listen to me. And Avram says, but Hashem said different. The angel says, Hashem said, bring him up. Hashem didn't say slaughter. Avram says, but I thought that's what Hashem meant. The angel says, you thought, you don't know if you're right. If you don't know if you're right, you're not allowed to slaughter him. Mm-hmm. Avram starts thinking, so I'm going to walk away from here, not sure if I did right. Just doing, well, out of doubt, I have to do this way. That's the way this is all going to end. Hashem shows up and says, I promise that you don't have to worry. This wasn't my intention. I promise I'm in the name of Hashem, the angel says, that this is a merit for you, that you're going to step down. You're making the right move. So where is Avram and where is Sarah? Where is Avram and where is Sarah? Sarah is greater than Avram in prophecy. But Sarah still gets excited. What is the essence of prophecy? When a person has prophecy, he doesn't sense anything else. He's drifting. He's only connecting to the prophetic vision. The only thing that his mind is doing is connecting. You see, sometimes a person wants something and nothing else interests him. A person can be working on something and they're so focused they don't notice if they're hungry or thirsty. And a person can even reach a point where they're so excited over something, or they're so upset at something, they can die. They can have a heart attack out of an emotion. Something happened, and the only thing they think about at that moment is that, and it can excite them to the point of death. So, a person can connect to what they desire on a very strong level. And a person can't live in life when they spend a long time being very excited over only one thing.
What do you mean by that?
That means if a person is so focused that they don't sense anything else, they're only focused on this. They're not hungry, they're not thirsty, they're not sleeping, they're not. There's a limit to how far you can go with that level of excitement. At some point, it kills a person. You can't be there.
Workaholics,
like really hurt, really. Yeah, but that's not to that extreme. So, what we see in our nature is something we could find in our soul. Just like in our nature we can focus and zone out everything else, so too our soul can focus and zone out everything else. That's what prophecy is. When a person sees prophecy, it's very dangerous because they have no idea what they're doing physically. That's why a prophet was sometimes called the insane one, because a person can be on a level where a person can lose everything. A person can connect to prophecy and never return to sanity. Says Rav Harlap, prophecy is also dangerous, and that's why the heavenly animals are described as going back and forth. Even in prophecy, a person zones in and zones out, and zones in and zones out, and if he doesn't zone out, he could lose everything. We have a physical body, which is what allows our soul to live, and our soul can move up and connect. But if the soul doesn't come back to retain the body, then the soul can lose everything, and then you don't have the vessel to connect. And that's where Moshe is different than all the other prophets. Moshe can purify his body to a point where when he goes up, he doesn't have to come back down. His body is pure. Moshe is on a level where no other prophet got, so his body can handle it. And what happens to Sarai Menu when she hears about the Akedah? So what happens to Sarai is she's thinking, this was Hashem's commandment. This is what we're supposed to do. We were on a level. We were given this. At that point, Sarah says, nothing matters. What Hashem wants matters. And at that moment, Sarah felt, I can connect to that. But when Sarah connects to that, she doesn't come back. Sarah says, I can connect to a life where nothing in this world matters, only the will of Hashem. But when she connects it on the extreme where nothing matters anymore. Nothing matters anymore. That's what Rav Chalap said. You can reach a point of a heart attack. When a person says, I focus everything, and he goes up and he doesn't come back down. And that's what Sarah does. Sarah says, great, okay, all of life is God. All of life is God. She reaches a level of prophecy where Rav Chalap says, a prophet always has to be able to come back to this world. We don't have time to finish Rav Chalap. We have one paragraph left. You guys are welcome to finish it on your own. I'll just mention what Rav Shlomo Fisher would often say on this parsha, that the greatest test of Avram was coming off the mountain. There's an opinion that says that the final test of Avram was burying Sarah, meaning the Akedah was test number 9. The greater test was after the Akedah to come back to normalcy. To go up to a level where you're all dedicated to God, okay, that's a level, right? It's the 9th test. The question is, can you come off the mountain and deal with the Hittites who are trying to swindle you and use their social norms and be polite and deal with stupidities of, I'm talking about this, I'm talking about that, I'm talking about zoning laws, I'm talking about... Does that matter? Nothing was important in life. What Hashem wanted was important. Now you have to deal with these people who are playing games with you. He finds Sarah passed away. That's the greater test. And Rav Chalap is saying, Sarah passes away mitat nishika. She says, I want to connect to Hashem. I don't need anything else in this world. Fine. There's nothing else that's important to me. She's connecting to the concept. So what are we crying for? So Sarah passed away. She got what she wanted. Sarah says, okay, life is all about connecting to Hashem. I'm connecting to that. So that's why there was no point in crying. Avram has to come back and first eulogize. Avram has to say, wait a second. Sarah's not upset that she died. Sarah got what she wanted here. But we have to realize what we lost. Right. Avram comes back, lispod, he comes to eulogize and say, we have to weep after the eulogy. After we start hearing what a great person Sarah was, we can cry over our loss.
But we've lost something. The same with any great tzaddik, right? I mean, they're not in a bad place. We lose
right,
something.
Right.
And the thing that's great about this is, you know, Moshe got prophecy face to face because he could handle this, but it would seem, in a certain sense, Sarah had too much prophecy. Almost. Because if she did not, like these other prophets who do come back and deal with day to day things afterwards, they say they get prophecy in a way where it's, you know what I'm saying, like dream, trance like, almost like a sleep, they describe it so that you're less likely to have to deal with other things in the world at the same time and do that balancing act. Abraham, you know, sitting at the tent, excuse me, God, I have guests, you know, if it's face to face, if it's not a dream, that's hard to imagine. And you just gave the reason, because most people wouldn't come back.
Yeah. Tom?